We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Did you spend every hour you could this March reading every Sleepers article you can, listening to every Sleeper podcast you can? Well, how's that going? How's Victor Scott doing for you? Kevin Masarajan and I are going to take a look at everybody's Sleepers, figure out if we're buying high, selling low. More on the RotoWire Fantasy Baseball podcast right after this. Welcome, everybody, to the Sunday edition of the RotoWire Fantasy Baseball Podcast. Eric Halterman here with my guest, Kev Masarajan of RotoBaller, a.k.a. RotoSurgeon on Twitter. And Kev, I brought you on today because we've got a show checking in on everybody's sleepers. How are they doing after a week? And I figured you'd be a good person to bring on because you're well-known on Twitter, I think, for, you know, reasoned, balanced, boring, unnuanced takes with no real passion behind them. So I think that's what I'm hoping you'll deliver here, right? Just a really bland hour ahead of us.
That's exactly what I'm known for. So Eric, thank you so much for having me. Excited to cover all of these sleepers who are all hitting, as we know.
Yep, we will get on to some guys who have already hit their way back into the minors. Really nice of the Cardinals to time Victor Scott's demotion with this show. Should we just start right there with the latest headlines?
You already brought it up. You already said it. So
exactly. We got some headlines to go over. Some injury news as normal, unfortunately. That's a lot of the headlines. But the main first headline of the day, Victor Scott. Well, he didn't make it very far. He was everybody's favorite speed demon this spring after it became clear that he had a really legitimate shot of breaking camp with the Cardinals. And then he, in fact, did after the Cardinals had enough injuries. And hey, if you thought that he was going to play good enough defense, that he was just going to give himself a chance to eventually get his bat in shape, the logic made some sense, right? I don't think that all the Victor Scott love was stupid at the time, but man, could not have gone much worse so far.
I mean, some guys just aren't ready. I mean, it's not to say Victor Scott's bad. It's not to say he'll never hit. It's just he wasn't ready. He's 23, just turned 23. It's, you know, some guys, it's like, you know, 24, 25 is when they hit their stride. It's not the end of the world for some guy on his first call. Hey, maybe later in the year he hits. I mean, you look at his profile. He has a better minor league profile than like Estrella Ruiz, and that's what he comps as, honestly. Estrella might have a little more pop in that bat, but you know, Scott has a better contact profile, much lower K rates, never crossed 18.3%. That was the highest it got in the minors. And even in the majors, 23.1%. That's not egregious. He just wasn't hitting the ball well. He wasn't making good contact, and it happens. He just wasn't ready. And maybe he goes down. I did 109 BABIP. Luck wasn't exactly in his favor either. So, you know, maybe the next time around. The only weird thing is his defense was really bad, and that's kind of what should be playing up for him regardless. So if there's any concern, it's his defense.
Yeah, it's a little bit weird to see that, yeah, the defensive metrics across the board, not really fans. I'm not sure if we read that as, well, you know, there's some small sample variance in defensive metrics over 20 games, or if we read that as, man, he was taking his struggles at the plate out into the field or something, but The long and short of it is it made a lot of sense for the Cardinals to send him down. He's been worth negative 0.9 war, according to Fangraphs. That's hard to do in just
one game. I could put that up.
Yeah, yeah, probably.
Those are Kev numbers. Those are Kev Mastrojan numbers in the MLB.
You just sit up there and strike out every single time. You're probably a little bit lower, but not much.
I might have lower than a 109 BABIP, too.
True. Yeah, I'm thinking probably 0.009 would be the best you could ever dream of.
On a good year.
Yeah. And the Cardinals didn't even bring up another outfielder in place of Victor Scott. And they didn't even send him down because another outfielder got healthy. They just called up a third catcher, Pedro Páez. So definitely this is about Scott himself and about the fact that they just don't see him as ready. And it's hard to argue with that. Some of the other news yesterday, a lot of injuries. Tristan Casas, he is out with a rib injury, which looks like it may end up being pretty bad, a rib strain. We don't have a precise timetable yet, but more than the minimum is expected here. And the notes keep talking about he was in some pain. That's never really the thing you want to see emphasized for his own sake or for the sake of his expected return date. And man, in terms of fantasy appeal, there's not much else coming up in Boston if we're going to not see Tristan Casas for a while. I don't think anybody's out there rushing to pick up Bobby Dalbec.
No, I don't think Bobby Dalbec would pick up Bobby Dalbec right now.
Yeah.
It's bad. He's been one of the worst hitters in a while. Like, that's like a 50% K rate? Like,
yeah.
Since like last year. I forgot what the exact, I saw it on Twitter floating around. But yeah, he's been bad. You look at this lineup. Oh my God. It's so sad with all the injuries. I was a Red Sox truther preseason. I'm not a Red Sox fan. I'm a Dodgers fan. But I looked at this lineup. I was like, Trevor Story, another year removed from his Tommy John. Tyler O'Neill in a very favorable park, and he was awesome. Devers being Devers. Casas breaking out potentially. And then, like, Duran, Yoshida, who I thought would take a step up. And he's looked better of late, but it's bad right now. It is, like, minor leaguers adjacent in the MLB.
Yeah, Rob Refsnyder was the number three hitter in yesterday.
Hey, he hit a home run. Respect Rob Refsnyder.
Right. I mean, and he's the heart of the order, at least against lefties right now. So maybe this makes the Boston lineup, at least over the next couple of weeks, if you see that coming up for a fringy starting pitcher, actually a better matchup than it might be in your head. Next injury to talk about, Christian Javier. He has hit the injured list with a neck strain. Don't have a precise timetable there, but at least the next couple weeks, we expect him to be out. There's some off days for Houston, so maybe they can not go with an extra starter, although it looks like maybe Spencer Arrighetti might be coming back. He didn't really show anything on his previous start. Yeah, he did just get called up. And two off days next week means technically they don't need to use him. So that's interesting to see. Are they going to just use him as a long man? I don't think that I would be picking up Arrighetti, though, unless there's anything there that you've seen that I haven't.
I like Arrighetti conceptually, but he hasn't been, you know, he faced the Braves. I don't blame anyone for struggling against the Braves. He's definitely someone to watch in his next start if he gets another start. And kind of just keep an eye on, because Houston's been bad, but with a good pitching game, they could win a game or two. They've just been really unlucky. Framber Valdez is hurt. Half their starting staff is on IL or like long-term IL. Verlander just got back. So, I mean, they could win games for Arrighetti if he comes back, if you're in a wins league. So I don't think it's crazy to pick him up if he performs well in his next start. The thing is, like, with Javier, he hasn't really been performing that well, even though his ERA is like 1.54. 5.36 XFIP, 5.34 Sierra. Would you drop him? Like, Casas, too, he's been kind of outperforming his XWO, but, like, you look at guys like this in a non-IL league, are you holding on to these guys? I don't think I would in a shallower league.
Yeah, certainly in a deeper league, I think you have to. But in a shallower league, with Javier, if the tough one there is that we don't really see any clear info about how long this is going to be. And if it's just, 3 weeks, I think I would feel dumb dropping him. But if there's a chance that it's, a month plus, I would rather have someone else, since, like you mentioned, his underlying numbers for Christian Javier have not been good. He's coming off a poor season. So if you're waiting a month plus just for this guy to come back in a 10 or 12 league, I don't like the idea of that. So I think he's more droppable. Casas, once we hear, you know, if we hear it's 6 to 8 weeks, even in a 10 to 12 team league, and even with Tristan Casas being pretty good, that's not necessarily an auto drop, but there's definitely teams where they're not going to have the room to hold on to him. So I think you bring up a good point there. I think certainly can be looking to drop some of these guys. More Javier for me, I would think. Other injuries, Anthony Rendon. I kind of thought he was going to play 162 games this year, but nope.
Hey, he did his best. He actually tried recently.
Yeah, he had been turning it around. He had a few good games, and now, unfortunately, a hamstring strain. Not going to see him for a little bit of time. I guess more playing time for Luis Renjifo and Miguel Sano. Good news for them. If you have them, Luis Renjifo was somebody that people liked mostly for his positional versatility, and then it wasn't clear exactly whether he was going to play as often as people wanted. So more playing time for Luis Renjifo is maybe the most fantasy relevant takeaway here.
I mean, good for look at Renjifo right now. Six steals in 2022, six steals in 2023, six steals already in 17 games in 2024. So I don't know where this is coming from him, but he's a speed demon right now. And his average, he's very funny right now. If you look at his career stats, 264 average in 2022, 264 average in 2023, 263 right now in 2024. Wow. So like he's like mirroring, and this is, I mean, obviously average is average, but like the steals, he's pacing for like 30 to 40 plus.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm just checking on whether or not he has decent sprint speed, because I know the Angels are running way more, right, under Ron Washington. It's a team-wide thing, and Renjifo, not really, 50th percentile. So this isn't as if he's some speed demon who had just chosen not to run in the past, and now he's being unleashed. And yeah, this is not like his sprint speed dropped either. He was at 51st percentile last year. So I don't know what to do with it, but it's a good thing to point out. 50 percentile might be enough if the team's just deciding to run now, that if Renjifo is, you know, even a 20 steal guy with positional versatility and a decent bat, that's something to keep an eye on. Elsewhere in injury news, DL Hall hit the injured list with a left knee sprain. I think this pretty much a cut everywhere, because his performance already made him a cut everywhere. DL Hall, somebody you might have wanted to take a shot on after his trade to the Brewers. You know, maybe they'll unlock something, make him an interesting starter. I don't think you need to wait out the injured list for a guy with an ERA that's 7.71. Bryce Wilson may be stepping in. Anything there with Bryce Wilson? I think we've seen enough years of Bryce Wilson not being interesting to say probably not.
Yeah, no, they're both no interest.
Quick pop quiz. Do you know what year Bryce Wilson debuted in?
I had him in a dynasty league, so I'm going to go ahead and say 2018.
Yeah, that's correct. All right. He's only 26, but he's been around for forever, it feels like. He had a few years where he just made a few appearances for Atlanta and didn't look very good, and he's been bouncing around. He just feels like he should be at least 30.
It was always weird because he had a weird body type. He's like 6'1", 220 or something, and that's like a weird starter build. Like, he had okay stuff, and he was one of those top glut prospects of pitchers the Braves had that, like, none panned out. Ian Anderson, Tuki Toussaint, Bryce Wilson. They had some – I think – no, Schuster was later maybe. They had a lefty as well. But, like, it's very funny to look back on, like, the 2018 Braves, and, like, they had all these bats that were, like – that hit their bats hit, and they're incredible now, their offense. But like, you look at their pitching, that like the future stuff they were supposed to have, none of them panned out.
Mike Foltynewicz,
I mean, he wasn't really a prospect, but he had that one good year. Yeah. Ian Anderson did too.
There's been a ton of guys. They were supposed to be the, look, this is how you build a team. You get a whole bunch of starters, and then you get a couple hitters like Ronald Acuna. Wait a second. Yeah. Turns out you do the opposite, and that has worked out pretty fine. But lesson there is no real interest in Bryce Wilson, except remember, he's actually not that old, despite being around for forever. So maybe if we circle back in 2 or 3 weeks, maybe. I'm open to the possibility. Merrill Kelly was scratched from his start today. Just before I created this outline, I'm just double checking. We now do have the info He's receiving an MRI on his right shoulder, so potential shoulder injury for Merrill Kelly. Obviously got to figure out the severity of that before figuring out the exact fantasy implications, whether or not you might have to think about dropping him. There's been plenty of injuries already in that Arizona rotation. Ryan Nelson's out with an elbow injury. Eduardo Rodriguez, of course, on the 60-day IL. So anybody coming up next, like a Tommy Henry or something, I don't think is likely to be very interesting in Arizona.
Yeah, I don't know what to make of Arizona right now. It sucks, but at the same time, Merrill Kelly specifically, too. Just got to wait and see.
Yep, and then final bit of news from yesterday. An interesting save. Reed Garrett, the pop-up reliever for the Mets, who kind of never done anything before this season, but suddenly looks like one of the best relievers in baseball, which can happen with relievers sometimes. He actually got a save for the Mets. I was talking about him with Ryan Boyer on our Fab podcast yesterday, and the thought was, well, he's really good, and you'll want him in some leagues, but he's not actually going to get any saves ever because he's in the same bullpen as Edwin Diaz. But in the Mets-Dodgers game last night, Edwin Diaz entered in the eighth inning to shut down the heart of the order. I think he faced Ohtani, Betts, Freeman. Was that where he came in? And it worked. Yeah. And then it was Reed Garrett in the ninth. So definitely not the team that we thought would suddenly start deploying their bullpen in a modern way. But do you think this is the start of a trend, or is this just a one-off, you know, when Shohei Ohtani's in the batter's box, you do different things?
I think Ohtani's in the batter's box to do different things. I'm not taking much from a Reed Garrett save. It happens, guys. Like Denilson Lamet got a save for the Dodgers and then they cut him. I mean, obviously they're not going to cut Reed Garrett. He's been incredible, but good teams do random things sometimes. And I mean, Evan Phillips isn't Edwin Diaz, but in terms of like sometimes the guy's the closer and you need him to face the best pitchers. I mean, the best hitters in a lineup, you do that. So, Oh, does Edwin Diaz lose 5 saves on the year? Maybe, but it's not changing my opinion of him.
Yeah, not changing it too much, but I wouldn't have thought he would lose any saves. So just now thinking of him as someone who might occasionally, we'll see. It's only been once, but if this happens a second time, you know, in the next week or two, then all of a sudden we start to think, what is Edwin Diaz being used like, say, Evan Phillips for the Dodgers or something? Again, don't want to overreact after just one, like you said. But not the bullpen that I would have thought would be going in this direction. We're going to move on to some sleeper talk, although I do have one comment from chat I want to throw in here related to Christian Javier. Speaking of tough drop decisions, somebody here has collected quite a crew of injured pitchers. Christian Javier, Jacob deGrom, I assume that's Cody Bradford, Garrett Cole, and Paul Sewald. Who would you drop there, Kev?
I think Javier. He hasn't been good. I mean, he's been good in sense of like outcomes, but I mean, if you're holding DeGrom this long and you want his upside, Bradford back soreness, I'm not so worried about, and he's looked incredible. Cole, you've been holding again this long, Sewald too. You might as well wait until they're active in like a month and then see what's going to happen. But yeah, Javier is the drop of this bunch.
Yeah, it might be Bradford for me just because like he has been better under the hood than Javier. So maybe I could see the argument. And maybe, like you said, the back soreness is a less severe injury. The only thing I'm thinking there is, am I really expecting a ton from Bradford when he comes back? Or am I just expecting him to be pretty good? And, you know, maybe I'm not expecting any more from Javier either. But the ceiling maybe I would think is higher with Javier when he returns, unless we're already thinking positive things about Cody Bradford.
I'm thinking positive things about Bradford. He's looked incredible. And the thing is, his IL stint came directly as a result of Lorenzen's activation. So I think they were trying to see who's going to stick in the rotation. Heaney's been awful. Dunning's been good enough. He hasn't been good under the hood. And the rest of the guys are like fine. So I think it's like they might transition Heaney to the bullpen and bring Bradford back kind of situation. And if Bradford's in that rotation, I'd much rather have him than Javier rest of the season.
All right, good call. So Cody Bradford, potentially keeping him, potentially looking at dropping Christian Javier if you have to. We are going to move on to our look at everybody's sleepers. How are they doing so far this year? Right after this message from Vivid Seats. Finally, baseball is back. This MLB season, knock it out of the park with Vivid Seats and score great tickets to the biggest games of the year. Every fastball, every home run, and every eye-popping play of your favorite team live and in person. Plus, with Vivid Seats rewards, you can earn rewards with every single purchase. Just buy 10 tickets, then cash in your credit toward your free 11th ticket. Talk about an easy win. And here's a pro reward tip. When buying tickets for your whole group, split the bill and make progress toward your free 11th ticket even faster. From behind the dugout to the upper deck, Vivid Seats has great tickets for all the 2024 games that matter to you. Just visit vividseats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live. See vividseats.com/rewards for terms and conditions.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Back here on the RotoWire Fantasy Baseball Podcast. We are looking at everybody's sleepers. That's the topic for today. Eric Kulterman here with my guest, Kev Masarjan, a.k.a. Roto Surgeon. And Kev, are you feeling like starting with the sleepers who are starting hot or the sleepers who are starting cold? Do you want to get negative or positive for the next 20?
I love to get – let's get negative, baby. I love getting all negative.
Right. We're going to jump down the outline and cut straight to the sleepers who are starting cold. And – this also gives me a chance to point out that we might stretch the definition of sleeper just a little bit, just to make sure that we have enough guys on the outline who are worth talking about. But I'm pretty sure that every guy we're talking about today, if you were reading multiple sleepers articles, listening to multiple sleepers podcasts in February and March, you will have seen these names on several of them. I know because I just went back and double checked a whole bunch of sleepers last night just to make sure I wasn't missing anybody. And yes, these guys were there. Now, the first guy on the list is Wyatt Langford, and he would not have been a sleeper if you're reading an article late in draft season, of course, because he shot way up the draft board in the NFBC main event. He went at pick 73. No sleepers are picked at 73. But certainly if you read a sleepers article in February, you'd be all over Wyatt Langford. And you wouldn't be too happy right about now. Zero homers, zero steals, .241, batting average, .606 OPS. Clearly not the amazing start that his biggest backers wanted. So the question that we're going to be playing throughout the show, I think, is do you sell low if you have Langford? Do you buy low because you actually did buy the sleeper buzz, you just not that much, or do you do neither?
I'm still quite high on Langford. It's mid-April, and it's not like he's like swinging and missing at everything. He has a 9% walk rate, 21% K rate. He's just not hitting for power, but that's, I mean, he has the power in his bat. That's not like not there. 19 runs plus RBI. So it's not like he's been completely useless. And the .241 average, it's just not good. It's mediocre, very mediocre. But at the same time, it's not unstartable. It's not killing you. It's just you're not getting what you paid for. But, I mean, if you have them, you're holding them. That's what I think. That's a clear start. But I also wouldn't trade for him because you never know. A rookie may not hit, but you know, you not to say he's a sunk cost, but you just kind of have to keep holding until like June, I'd say. Let it get a little hotter in Texas, because once it gets hotter, the ball starts flying. And again, he's making the contact, he's just not making the good contact.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. The strikeout rate, of course, is something that we watch closely early in the season because it becomes meaningful early in the season. Yeah. And his is totally fine. 21% strikeout rate. Nothing wrong with that. That's not a strength. It's not a weakness. A lot of ways that rookies struggle is by not making nearly enough contact. And that is not the problem with Langford. So certainly if we're looking for reasons to panic, I'm not seeing them, but I'm also with you in that I'm not sure I'd be aggressively going out and sending buy low offers on him, because there's not really a lot that he's done to get excited about either. His actual performance this season is of a pretty boring compiler, right? His biggest strength is he plays all the time. He's only sat twice, and so he's got decent run and RBI totals. And so there's just nothing here that really inspires me to say, you know what, all that Wyatt Langford hype, I think it was all real, and I want to try to put together a package, right? So if somebody's offering him to me, sure, but I don't think that's going to happen.
Yeah, exactly. I wouldn't go out and get him, but if you could, like, you know, finagle him in a trade somehow, absolutely. Why not? Like, if you're getting him as a throwaway piece from someone. Like, they just got Nate Lowe back in the lineup. Langford got pushed down, but at the same time, if the lineup starts hitting, Corey Seager's not hitting either, really. He has one home run on the season. This offense hasn't really started to pop. Evan Carter's struggling. He started, what, like 0-15? He took a couple walks, but like this offense has not hit its stride whatsoever. And if it does, and if there are, you know, runners on base for Langford more often, you could see him start to pop.
So disappointing, but no reason to panic, sums up our thoughts on Wyatt Langford. The next guy, beyond a disappointment and beyond reason to panic, because you've already cut him, AJ Puck. Yeah. Definitely a widely hyped starting pitcher sleeper this spring, once it looked like he was getting a shot to break camp in the Marlins rotation due to all their injuries. And I think it made sense to be in on him, right? If you get somebody who showed really good numbers as a reliever, who was always supposed to be a starter, and hey, you know what? Maybe it'll work out. And if it doesn't, I'll move on to the next guy. Well, you've had to move on really quickly, because after four starts with a 9.22 ERA, 2.63 whip, more walks than strikeouts, Puck is out of the rotation. He's now technically injured, or at least he's on the injured list. This may be just a way to take him out of the firing line. Not entirely sure, but definitely did not work out, this sleeper call. Did you like the sleeper call for AJ Puck? Did you think the logic made sense? Are you also struggling with this one?
I mean, if you're cutting him, obviously, that's not an issue, or that's not a concern. But looking at AJ Puck, I bought in to the post-spring training hype, thinking his numbers were incredible as a reliever. So that's undeniable. He had the pedigree. He was one of the top prospects in baseball as a pitcher with the A's. Then he went to the Marlins, and he's a great reliever. And, you know, he didn't work out. But I was willing to buy in, and I'm always willing to bet on talent, which he has. It just didn't work. It was the first time as a starter, and it didn't work out. So, you know, sometimes you swing and miss, and that's okay, because when it hits big. So, you know, that sucks.
And I think the only question left with Puck, I mean, I'm not even going to bother asking the, do you buy low on him? I mean, certainly not as a starter. The only question to ask is, if you're in a league that's deep enough that it's worth maybe holding on to him and hoping that he becomes the closer. I mean, would you be doing that? I don't even think in a 15 team mixed league, this is that maybe only like NL only talk at that point.
You'd have to have like multiple IL spots, and like, yeah, again, like you'd have to have like a saves only league. That's the only out for Puck right now. It's kind of like the mental thing of transitioning back to a closer, or back to a reliever in general, and then earning that role. And he was already not the full-time closer. I mean, they have a weird situation. Their bullpen isn't good, but at the same time, it's like Puck hasn't been good at all. So you're banking on multiple dominoes falling for Puck to regain value. And I don't think that's going to happen at least anytime soon, maybe later in the season by all means, but are you going to hold him that long? I wouldn't.
Yep. I think there won't be many teams where it makes a whole lot of sense to hold on to AJ Puck. So a universal whiff there, even though I agree. I think the logic made enough sense. I was behind that as well. Another guy who was maybe the most universal sleeper, I think, on the hitting side, Mikel Garcia. I don't know if there was a single fantasy analyst who didn't like Mikel Garcia. Maybe you've met one, but there was everything to like about him. He could run. He could play defense. He made a decent amount of contact, and that contact was really loud. He just only hit 4 homers, so that kept his price down, and you could really dream on him becoming, you know, 5-category player this year. Mm-hmm. And wow, after the first couple games this season, it looked like he might, with 2 homers in his first 3 games, 3 homers in his first 6. It looked like we were getting the Mikel Garcia breakout. Yeah, not so much anymore. He's down to a 572 OPS, hasn't hit a homer since. So where do you stand on Mikel Garcia these days? Is this just, you know, or do we get way ahead of ourselves, or do you think he's going to live up to the sleeper buzz before too long?
I feel like we saw the high. And now we're seeing the obvious low. This is undeniable. He's like a sub 200. I think he's a 176 now after today. Looking at Mikel Garcia, X stats like him enough. They don't love him, but like he's underperformed the last 2 seasons, or at least this season as well. So he's still making that contact. He showed that popped early. He really only has to hit like 10 homers to be that quote unquote sleeper, because he's going to steal what, like 30 bases? He had 23 last year in 515. He has 4 in 90 plate appearances this season, and he just hasn't been getting on base to steal, but his rate is pretty good when he does get on base. He doesn't walk too much, but he walks enough. Looking at him, I think he's just, again, like, not to say like Langford, but if anybody drops him, I'm picking him up ASAP in an average league. OBP, I can live without him, but even so, like an average league, absolutely. I think this, like, below Mendoza line, Mikel Garcia isn't going to last. His defense is still solid, and he's going to play every day. He just shouldn't be batting leadoff because, again, he's not a high OBP guy.
Yeah, looking at some of his plate discipline numbers, just see if anything's changing there. Doesn't really seem like it. It's not like he suddenly started chasing. He's making a little bit less contact when he does chase, but I'm not sure that after just 3 weeks is something that we worry too much about. I'm not seeing a ton that says we should think about Mikel Garcia too differently from how we thought about him in February and March. So a lot of those good things still there. I think for me, it was more after that first week when he had his 3 homers, then we could start to think, oh, wow, what if he just took all the steps forward that he needed to take? What if they all happened right now? What are we going to get? Are we going to get, you know, a 3rd round fantasy pick or something? And if you started dreaming after that first week, it was kind of understandable, right? Big sleeper big first week and exactly the way you want him to have. I think we're resetting still now. Yeah.
It could still happen. He has a 197 BABIP, and it's probably actually, no, it's 190 right now, again, after today. He's due. Like, you can't say that about everyone. Like, is Langford due for 30 home runs and 30 steals? No. But at the same time, could he do that? Sure. But like, Mikel has been making the contacts. He's just kind of getting really unlucky more than other players. So, but he already showed that upside early on. So he's definitely a hold or a pickup if he gets dropped, because this is a very good piece to have on your roster.
And even a buy low, right? Of all the guys on our struggling sleepers list, I think he's definitely the one I would be considering sending out offers for. Again, I'm not thinking that 20-plus homers is likely anymore, but 10 to 15, still totally possible, and that's all we were really hoping for at the start of the season. Victor Scott is on this list. We touched on him at the start, and given that he's now been sent down, I think when I put this list together, he was not yet sent down, so I could have still asked you, are you going to buy low on Victor Scott? I'll ask you now just for fun. Are you going to buy low on Victor Scott right after he was sent down? No. Okay.
Like, if I was in a dynasty league, yes. If I in a redraft.
Let's talk about it from that. Okay. Have you adjusted your long-term thought on Victor Scott in any way after 20 games?
No, none.
Okay. your thought is just he was up too early. I think that makes a lot of sense. Let's go down the list to another guy. I'm not 100% sure whether or not the sleeper tag fits this guy, but Hunter Brown was a pitcher that I think a lot of smart fantasy people were interested in because they liked him heading into last year and he underperformed his ERA estimators. I think that is a pretty classic formula for a sleeper, right? Somebody who had a bad ERA, but good ERA estimators, and we liked him heading into last season. Everybody likes that guy. Well, Hunter Brown, through four starts this year, a 10.54 ERA, a 2.78 whip. He's striking out 14.5% of opposing batters, walking 13%. Man, none of this is good with Hunter Brown. This is not what's supposed to happen. Did you end up with much Hunter Brown?
I had all the Hunter Brown.
All right, you're very familiar with this. What are you doing with all those Hunter Brown shares? Yes.
I mean, luckily I benched him this week, but I mean, it's not like he was awful, awful. Like, at looking at today, at least, Washington's offense isn't terrible. 6 Ks, 2 walks, you know, but 4 hits. I don't think he gave up a home run. No, I mean, his FIP, XFIP from today is 173, 173. I mean, he's had some starts where it's like you see the glimmers, but it's all ERA estimators you still have to look at to kind of see this light. I don't think you could drop him yet because of, I mean, he has the Rockies next week. He's in Coors. That sucks. I wouldn't start him. Just, I mean, but watch him go off for like 6 innings, 10 Ks, 2 hits.
Yeah.
Just knowing how random crap is like that. But yeah, I feel like I'm sick to my stomach in leagues where I drafted him that aren't best ball because I just don't want to have to decide when and where to start Hunter Brown. But I still think there's a really good pitcher in there. The Astros, they don't have the pitching coach, Brent Strom, I think it was. He's in the Diamondbacks organization now. So maybe losing him changed a lot. I mean, the injuries haven't helped, but I still believe in Hunter Brown. It's very early. We're literally a month into the season. March 20th was the Korea Games. So,
right.
Not yet. For a healthy pitcher who's still getting the strikeouts, he performed well enough against the Braves this past week or earlier this week. I don't know where you're at. For me, it's like there's too many injuries and so little talent out there that I'm not going to drop him yet.
Yeah, I didn't end up with him on any teams because I guess I thought that the jump people thought that he needed to make in this year to justify his draft price was a little bit bigger than what I thought he was going to make, but I would have been happy to draft him if the market wasn't quite so high on him. I don't know if that counts as endorsement. I guess it really doesn't, but I thought he was a talented pitcher and I certainly didn't expect anything like this. So I'd be right there with you. I would be certainly not dropping him in anything but a rather shallow league, maybe in a, you know, 10-person league where you only start 8 pitchers, 7 pitchers, something like that. Things are different there, but you got to be thinking of him differently until he starts putting some good performances together. You got to be not using him against all the opponents that you thought you were going to. Are you buying low? I mean, there's not really a lot in the stats that says you should buy low this year.
I mean, if buying low assumes that you have other options, or like, no, I wouldn't be buying low, but if you have him, I'm holding him, if that makes sense.
All right. Yeah, that does indeed make sense. How about another starting pitcher who was getting some buzz a month or two ago? Gavin Stone of the Dodgers, as a later sleeper, perhaps he moved up in draft boards once it became clear that he was going to be in the Dodgers rotation. Gavin Stone, as a rookie, in 31 innings as a swing man was terrible. 9 ERA, 190 whip, and a pretty bad strikeout rate as well, 14.5%. So there's nothing really to go on in his actual performance in the majors, but you had his past pedigree as a prospect. He was quite a decent prospect, and you have the fact that he was going to get a rotation spot. That was maybe the best rotation spot in baseball, right? Anybody who's got a spot in that Dodgers rotation, that's about as good as you can ask for in terms of chances at a win and pitcher's park. It's a decent pitcher's park, or decent enough at least. So there's a lot of reasons to like Gavin Stone beyond his performance, but man, his performance this year, his ERA is 6. I guess that's better than 9, but it's 6. His whip, he's shrunk his whip. It's all the way down to 178. So if you were in on Gavin Stone, you have not gotten much return so far. Is it time to just cut bait, or is there any buy low potential here?
Oh yeah, you're cutting bait. Walker Buehler's back probably this week. They already have like a 6-man rotation regardless. So you're cutting Gavin Stone. Like that's no questions asked. And I love Gavin Stone. I still think he's going to be a good starter in the future. ERA indicators improved for him, 3.12 FIP. That's very good. 4.66 XFIP, not so much, but even so, I mean, he hasn't given up a home run this year.
Yeah.
He's just 62.5% left on base, 3.79 BABIP. Obviously, the walks aren't helping, but he's kind of building on attrition towards himself. But that's neither here nor there. That's for Dynasty. Looking at Gavin Stone, it's an obvious cut in redraft leagues just because he's probably going to get sent down and maybe traded. So that's just not in the cards right now.
Do you think that
also, he might... Sorry, can I go back to Hunter Brown?
Yeah.
Okay, so he has the Mexico start, which is awful this week. But after that, he gets home versus the Mariners at Detroit and then home versus the A's. So brighter days ahead for Hunter Brown.
Yeah, yeah, definitely more reason to hold on and hope that he turns things around. But man, you better hope that he looks like he's someone you want to use before that stretch starts, because you're going to have some tough decisions if you've got that really awesome stretch, but you've got his numbers you're looking at. One more question here on Gavin Stone. Do you think the next time the Dodgers get a starter back, do you think it's Stone is going to lose his job? What about Landon Knack, who just came up for a spot start? Looks like he'll make one more at least. Do you think there's something there with Landon Knack? Is he a prospect that's gotten talked about really in Dodger circles, or is he just kind of there for now?
I mean, he was definitely a second round draft pick, so it's not like he's a nobody. Knack is interesting by all means, but he's made one start. His minor league, he's an older prospect. He's 26 and he's making his first jump into the majors, but he's also someone who pretty irrelevant with, Buehler on the way back.
Yeah. So
it's just maybe hard to push. I mean, maybe him and Yarbrough work in tandem. I just don't know what the Dodgers are going to do.
Right. Yeah. And that is where the Dodgers strategy to handling their rotation makes it tough for fantasy purposes, because there's a constant stream of guys who you want to think, oh, hey, maybe, a guy like Gavin Stone, right? Guys who they work into the back of the rotation, who you think, man, if they could just stick in the Dodgers rotation, wow. But the Dodgers don't really do that. That's the way they handle the back of the rotation, is they use 8 different guys for 5 starts and none of them end up having long-term fantasy appeal. Our final sleeper, who is starting quite cold, is Henry Davis, catcher for the Pirates. He is now a catcher. I think he will have qualified. He was not drafted as a catcher because he was outfield only, but he was that sleeper of, hey, this guy, you won't even see him in the catcher pool, but he is a pretty interesting catcher too. You should go get Henry Davis, the number one pick from the 2021 draft. He didn't look great as a rookie last year in 62 games, but people were willing to write that off and assume that just a modest step forward would be enough to make him viable at the catcher position. He's taken a step, but it's probably more than modest, and it's not forward. He's hitting .182 with a .524 OPS, 0 homers in 17 games, just a 2.6% barrel rate. I'm not seeing much here with Henry Davis. Certainly nothing to buy low on, and I'm not even sure about a hold.
You know what's funny? He's getting lapped by Joey Bart, the former second overall pick. And, Davis is the former first overall pick. They weren't in the same draft, but it is just very funny to see on the same team now. I'd rather have Bart than Davis. I don't think that's crazy.
Yeah.
I don't think that's crazy at all. Like, looking at obviously it's very, very early. It's like 17 plate appearances for Bart, but he's mashing the ball. And Davis was mashing the ball in spring, like Langford. But if you look at their metrics and you look at what Davis did last year, and then he had elbow surgery, it makes sense that he's struggling. This isn't crazy. Maybe in the second half of the season he breaks out, but I have no interest in Davis. I'd rather have Patrick Bailey. I'd rather have Elias Diaz, Tyler Stevenson. There's so many catchers you could name that I'd rather have on the waiver wire. Austin Wells is better, and he's not hitting either.
Yeah, so there was some reason to be interested theoretically in Davis, but it was all, past pedigree based, and there's been no performance really this season, so pretty easy to cut bait there. we are going to shift over to everyone's sleepers who are off to good starts. Let's bring a little positivity into the world. But first, let's bring an advertisement into the world. This one from On Demand DFS. Do you ever think back to the golden days of fantasy football? You know, when it was all about the love of the game, the camaraderie, and yes, the bragging rights. Well, our friends at On Demand DFS are bringing those days back with their revolutionary app that's changing the game for fantasy fans everywhere. Gone are the days of confusing entry fees, playing against unknown masses, or juggling multiple apps to trash talk with your league mates. On Demand DFS is here to streamline your fantasy football experience, making it more about strategy, fun, and most importantly, the community. With On Demand DFS, you can create a contest in seconds, invite your friends, and you're off to the races. No entry fees, no gimmicks, just pure fantasy football bliss. And here's the kicker. You're not limited to current season players. Imagine crafting your dream lineup from over 5,000 NFL legends and today's stars using real historical data to simulate the action. And for those who hate the wait, you'll love Turbo Mode. Contests wrap up in minutes, not hours, keeping the excitement going all week long. Download the On Demand DFS app now and get started with a 30-day free trial. Dive into a fantasy football experience that's rich in history, strategy, and, most importantly, fun. It's time to create your legacy with the ultimate lineup of legends and live out your fantasy football dreams like never before. We're back here on the Sunday edition of the RotoWire Fantasy Baseball Podcast, talking about everyone's sleepers here with Kev Masarejan, aka Roto Surgeon. And we have talked about everyone's sleepers that we all as a fantasy community got wrong, or at least have gotten wrong through the first month. Let's all give some love to ourselves and the rest of the fantasy prognosticating universe here, because there's quite a number of players who were pretty widely hyped and are off to good starts. Hey, that's how it should work. No one exemplifies that more than Jared Jones. The Jared Jones hype was bubbling throughout camp, started pretty small when it looked like he at least had an outside shot at making the team. But after a dominant spring, tons of love for Jared Jones as a late dart throw, but I think he's dramatically surpassed all reasonable expectations for him, at least through four starts. A 36% strikeout rate against a 2% walk rate to go with his 3.13 ERA. These are, you know, best pitcher in baseball type numbers, at least the underlying numbers.
Oh, I mean, he looks literally, I don't want to say the next Strider, but he looks like that in terms of like the numbers. This is hilarious because his numbers did not look like this in the minors. I don't know what happened. Like he's not walking anybody. And I mean, the home runs, he's still giving up at an okay-ish. I mean, 1.57 per nine, 18.2% home run to fly ball. Those are relatively high. But it doesn't matter if you're not walking anyone. It's like, how is he doing this? Where did this come from?
It's George Kirby level walk rate. So it's like best pitcher in baseball. It's insane.
It's Kirby walk rates with like Hunter Green strikeout rates. That's the best pitcher possible. Yeah. I don't know how sustainable it is because I mean, like, how? He's two walks this season and he's faced the Phillies and the Orioles in that span. He walked none of them.
Yeah, I'm really interested in his walks, I think, in particular. I can buy that a pitcher who was striking out 26 to 28% of batters in the minors has really good stuff, and maybe with some tweaks, he strikes out even more batters. I don't think he's going to stick around at 36%, sure. But if he falls down to 30 or 28 or something, I buy that for sure. I am really intrigued about a guy who didn't just have okay control. He had control problems. That was the red spot on his resume, right? It was very good stuff, but control problems bad enough to maybe even send him to the bullpen. To see a guy going from that to George Kirby doesn't make any sense to me. So just how high that walk rate ends up rising in the future after he's had more starts under his belt. I mean, four starts is not that many for a walk rate, but man, we got to assume that he at least has pretty good control and that walk rate isn't going to be a problem, right? And so if he's somebody that we're saying is going to have a ton of strikeouts and probably is going to have above average control, that's really, really good already. So is he a buy high? Or is he someone that you're going to try to get and see if anybody out there is you know, I don't know what you're going to have to offer, but is he somebody that you're going to still try to get even with his awesome start, or is he in some way a sell high?
He's a buy high. I mean, like, until he proves otherwise, like, I don't know what you can do. Other, like, you look at these numbers, you're just like in awe. I'd rather bet on the talent to continue to pan out than bet against him and bet on walks showing up, which they might as like, they may show up and he could still be a really good pitcher with this strikeout rate. I have no clue how, I guess they pitched him five innings and only threw 55 pitches his last start. And that's the red flag, but he's healthy. As far as we know, he still had a great start. I mean, unless there's some underlying issue that the Pirates know of that we don't, that like if he pitches six innings, he blows up. I doubt that. But I mean, well, actually looking at the field of starting pitchers across the league, that wouldn't shock me.
Why we want to be careful with our next Spencer Strider takes. But, you know, I don't think we can plan. I don't think you sell high because you think he's going to break tomorrow. I don't think that's how it works.
Yeah.
You're just more open to the idea that there's more injury risk for Jones than there would be for someone else over the course of the next, you know, five seasons or something. But no doubts about Jared Jones. Tons of love for him here. And yeah, maybe even see what the price would be. Another pitcher that I think got pretty widespread love is Shota Imanaga of the Cubs. Nowhere near as much love as Yoshinobu Yamamoto, who of course was going as a fantasy ace, but Imanaga more in the sleeper realm, or maybe getting pushed up a little bit too much to technically count as a sleeper. But again, the point here is to talk about the most hyped players from February and March, and that was certainly Imanaga. And wow, it looks pretty correct so far. Through four starts, 0.84 ERA, 0.75 WHIP. In 21 and a third innings, he has 21 strikeouts against just two walks. This looks like it's going to work for Shota Imanaga. Not much doubt about him as a very viable MLB starter.
Oh, yeah. I mean, undeniable that, like, Imanaga has been elite, basically, him and Jones. Not to the same level as Jones, but, I mean, the walk rate is. Like, you can't see it. And he's not giving up home runs, which is kind of the issue that could pop up if there is one for Imanaga. He is a extreme fly ball pitcher. Those can absolutely pop up. His strikeouts aren't incredible, but even so, with that walk rate, the K-minus walk is elite, and that plays. So even if he starts giving up home runs, he could still be a top-end starter in fantasy baseball. And yeah, another guy, I mean, would I buy high to the extent of Jones? No. I mean, I might let him have one meh start and then go on and buy. But yeah, he's definitely someone I'd want for the rest of the year.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting point about waiting until he has a bad start if you're trying to buy, because I was wondering maybe, even though I like him, is he maybe a sell high just because those home runs will start coming as the weather warms up or something. But obviously, even if they start coming, we look at something like his XFIP. XFIP is an ERA estimator, which assumes that you have a league average homer for fly ball rate. It doesn't look at your actual home runs allowed. And the XFIP for Shota Imanaga so far is 3.43. So that says that if he had been giving up home runs to this point, he'd only have a 3.43 ERA. So that's still pretty good. So theoretically, there's some sell high in my head if somebody's really into Imanaga and thinks that he's, you know, true ace, top 20 pitcher in baseball type guy, if you can get somebody coming at you with a crazy offer. But I certainly have nothing really negative to say about what I've seen so far.
Nope.
Moving on to the next guy, Christopher Sanchez. I doubt you will have found many fantasy people who didn't talk up Christopher Sanchez at some point this past off season. He was somebody I loved, not just because he's a Philly, but because he was better than average in strikeouts, walks, and ground ball rate all last year. If you're better than average in all three of those, I'm pretty interested. And he was quite good in walk rate, only a 4% walk rate last season in 99 and a third innings. Through four starts this year for Christopher Sanchez, 2.53 ERA. 1.31 WHIP isn't amazing, and that's because the walk rate has jumped up. It's just a little bit below 9%. But the strikeouts are up and the ground balls are up, and pretty much everything you wanted to see with Sanchez is there. Is this a buy high or a sell high or a hold? How are you feeling about Christopher Sanchez?
I mean, he's carrying over his 2023 changes. He looks like a very, he looks incredible. Like, I mean, he has the walk rate, which is not great at 8.7%, but he has a solid enough 27% strikeout rate. Hasn't given up a home run, and he's an extreme ground ball pitcher. So
yeah,
like he's kind of the opposite of Imanaga in a way. Cause like he has the walks, but doesn't and won't have the home runs or won't have it to an extreme degree at any point or even a league average degree. So I'm definitely buying Christopher Sanchez. This is the second year in a row he's displayed this. He's kind of like the Michael Garcia of pitchers, but he's still performing is the thing. Like this is a breakout.
Yep, I'm right there with you. I would be much more of a buy high than a sell high. I think everything is legit with Sanchez. I don't know if you're going to be able to pry him away from anybody, but he's not somebody who I'd be looking to cash in any way. How about Bryce Miller, another pitcher who's getting some interest? Again, maybe a little bit too early to technically count as a sleeper, but broaden your definition there. A widely hyped guy, I would say. Bryce Miller had a decent first season, only a 4.32 ERA, but showed some potential and was adding a splitter this season. There was a lot of reasons to be interested to see if he was going to take a step forward, and so far he definitely has. He's got a 1.85 ERA, 0.82 whip through four starts for Bryce Miller. Strikeout rate's up to 26% too. Got to like what we're seeing from Bryce Miller. It's another guy that you probably wouldn't be selling high on.
Yeah, the issue with Miller is lefties. Like, lefties crush him, at least last year, and the splitter has helped to mitigate it, and he's performing at a league average level now versus lefties, which is exactly what you want because he demolishes righties. He's so good with his fastball, and it's one of the best in baseball. So as long as he can keep limiting damage versus lefties and performing at a league average rate, at which he has, again, like, what is he? 413 xFIP, 430 FIP, that's fine. I mean, his BABIP is 0.097 right now. That's going to regress. The 15.7% K minus walk against lefties, again, very, very average. As long as he can sustain that, even with BABIP regression, Bryce Miller should be very good for the rest of the year. He's not going to sustain a sub-2 ERA. Mm-hmm. He'll be a 3-ish ERA guy, but that, I mean, the Mariners just keep pumping out these very good starters, and Bryce Miller's one of them.
Yeah, gotta love anybody pitching in that ballpark or in half their starts, so much more closer to a buy high than a sell high on Bryce Miller. How about Cutter Crawford? Lots of the Red Sox pitchers got some buzz this offseason with a new regime there in town. Craig Breslow, Andrew Bailey, both involved there. Cutter Crawford was actually a very good strikeout to walk guy last year, 26% strikeout rate against 7% walk rate. Only a 4.04 ERA, wasn't anything special, but man, through five starts this year, strikeouts are up, walks are up too, but that ERA down to 0.66 and the whip just shy of one. Great start from Cutter Crawford. Another potential buy high, or are you seeing some things here that would change the tone here?
Yeah, Cutter's a sell. And it's not to say he's not talented, but his walk rate is up. He has a 10% walk rate, nearly doubled from last year. His strikeouts are slightly up, but it's not enough. He has a lower K minus walk. BABIP is 235. That's going to regress. And he plays in a tough home park with, Fenway. Looking at him, I think as it heats up and the team's not good, like they've lost some of their best pieces again, as we discussed. I don't want too many. I mean, Whitlock just got hurt. Cutter, I'm not saying he's going to get hurt, but I think regression could hurt him. And if the wins aren't really there, he has, what, one win on the season and five starts. I don't think it's going to, compile much for the rest of the year. Definitely think regression could hurt him. Can he still be good to very good? Yes. But the chances of him being potentially bad are also there. Very high left on base rate, 89%. I definitely think he hasn't given up a home run, and he's going to give up home runs in Fenway, as everyone does. So yeah, I'm selling Cutter Crawford, but I do think he's good, and I think he's a good draft piece for next year as well. So it's not like he's a bad pitcher, just he's way overperforming.
Right. Yeah, and certainly a sell high isn't totally an insult. It just means that, well, this guy is a little bit, he's not going to keep it up, and I think somebody else might think he's going to keep it up, and I might be able to get something there. Right. A sell high, the guy's got to be high to begin with. So Certainly, yeah. Cutter Crawford fits into that bill. I could see wanting to try to see what you can get for him there. Couple hitters who were getting some buzz and are starting hot. Nelson Velazquez was more of a deep sleeper, a power guy for the Royals, finally getting his chance at regular at-bats after he had 17 homers in 53 games last season. He's very much an all-in power guy with real strikeout problems, and that's been the case so far. But I'm including him as starting hot, even though it's not that hot, hitting 281, 790 OPS, pair of homers so far. But if you thought that you were going to get some late power from Nelson Velazquez, I think he's living up to the bill there.
I mean, there's not much, two home runs, but yeah, 11 runs, 7 RBI, a steal. That's awesome to see. But yeah, the 281 average is way inflated by the 410 BABIP. X stats, not bad, but also not super favorable. He's definitely like a hold or even a pickup if he's like available in your league, but I'm not like seeking out to trade for Nelson Velazquez anytime soon. Good piece, but
I don't think
he's moving the needle.
Yeah, I think that sounds right. It was harder to find hitter sleepers who were doing well early on. I don't know if that was just the way I was looking.
It's April. It's so early. I guess, I mean, it's not really. Yeah, it's really tough. A Winker, but like that wasn't even a sleeper on anyone's board. Jesse Winker is like the only like really hot, like nobody was talking about at all guy. But
And I specifically for this episode wanted to talk about the guys who people were talking about, right? So I wanted to leave out the guys like Jesse Winker who popped after draft season. There's one final name on my list here, Jackson Merrill. He got some buzz once it was determined that he was making the team in San Diego. Although he also got plenty of people saying, yeah, but I don't know he's going to do much this year. He's doing much so far, hitting 311 and his expected batting average 298 says he's not really overachieving by too much there. Only one homer, but four steals. Jackson Merrill looks like a legit piece. Would you be cashing this piece in and selling high or holding or trying to buy?
I'm very conflicted because I definitely was one of those. Yeah, I'll probably buy in 2025 guys. He's still really young. He's 21, former first round pick. So he has the talent. I'm not saying he's not good. How much power is going to show? That is a really tough home park to hit homers in. I mean, we saw Juan Soto struggle there. I think I would be cashing, but it's like, what can you get for him? If you have him, probably hold it. Cause if you're not, don't sell just to sell.
Right.
But if you could get a good piece back, I'd definitely try to move him. Cause I don't know how much power he's going to show. I mean, the four steals in 23 games is good. The average should be good, but maybe he's just like a little better Luis Arraez or like similar to last year, which is good, but not like ideal. I guess the steals are the difference here.
Yeah, the weird thing here is that his hard hit rate is actually pretty good, and that's out of alignment with he's supposed to be a hit over power guy. And his hard hit rate, 49%, is pretty good. So maybe there's something, but, you know, only one homer so far. So I think I'm with you in thinking you might be more likely to get an interesting piece than get a ton from him. We are out of the guys I threw on my list, and we're more or less out of time, but I wanted to quickly get your thoughts on a couple guys in the comments. Garrett Crochet, I'm not sure if he counted as a sleeper because people weren't really talking about him until the season started. So that's why I didn't put him on this list. But he's had a few excellent starts and then a couple shaky ones. His ERA is now nearly six. So I don't even know if it counts as sell low or sell high because all his underlying numbers are great. I wasn't sure where to put him on the outline, but I do want to ask you, would you be trying to trade Garrett Crochet if you had him?
Oh, you're buying Crochet. Okay. Even his bad start against the Reds, he had 10 Ks and 4.2 innings and incredible back end numbers. He had a really bad start against the Phillies. There's nothing you know that you can say that was good about that. But at the same time, at Phillies, you know, Citizens Bank is a tough park. The Phillies are really good versus left-handed pitching because they have like a ton of really good righties. I'm definitely buying Crochet. The only issue is his injury risk, which is massive. But I mean, if you could get him for a Jackson Merrill, let's say, I would absolutely do that because I think Crochet is an actual difference maker. The only problem is besides the injury risk, is the White Sox team he plays for. But as a talent, as a piece, he's incredible.
And then one final one to get your thoughts on. I've lost the comments on it, but somebody asked much earlier on about Ellie De La Cruz. I don't think he was everyone's sleeper. I think he was everyone's bust. And that's why I want to end the show with him. I think if you asked 10 fantasy analysts in February or March, which guy is going to bust, which early pick is the biggest bust risk, I think 9 of them would have said Ellie De La Cruz. And guess what? If you look at our earned auction values page, he's second behind only Mookie Betts. So, wow, yeah. Ellie De La Cruz, if you have enjoyed his first few weeks so far and you've gotten that profit, are you selling high? Or do you think this is Ellie De La Cruz and you're holding?
I think this is Ellie De La Cruz and you're holding. Depends. I mean, the degree of which I'd hold is dependent on a trade offer. You know, if someone offers you a Godfather offer, absolutely. Like, you know, make your team better at all costs. But like a roto league, he's almost invaluable. I feel like a head-to-head league, I'd be way more willing actually to trade him. Whereas roto, his multi-category contribution is, you can't put a price on it, really. It would take an absolute Godfather offer to move me.
Yeah, theoretically, there might be some Godfather offers out there because he's the type of exciting player who you would make those offers about because, man, he's sure fun to have on your team. But it would take a ton for me to get rid of him, certainly. That's going to do it for today's show. Thank you very much, Kev. You're a great guest breaking down everybody's sleepers. And we'll be back with another show on the RotoWire Fantasy Baseball Podcast tonight. Monday's show should be Jeff and Scott reviewing Fab. We'll be here every day on the RotoWire Fantasy Baseball Podcast.
Thanks for having me, Eric.